Mukam karoti vachalam bhagam bhagate girim yaki bantamam bande shi guru vinatarinam om ajnanati vrandasya jnananjana shalakaya chakshur militam yena tasmai shri gurave namah. So welcome to the fourth class of our seminar on the learning from the 24 gurus. Yesterday we had five gurus: the python, the ocean, the moth going into fire, the honeybee, and the elephant. So, what did we learn from the python yesterday?
Take things as they come.
Take things as they come. Accept what comes of its own accord. Don't over-endeavor for things that are difficult to attain. Of course, for a spiritual life, it's all right to over-endeavor, because usually we don't over-endeavor for spiritual life. So then... That was... this was Dattatreya also. Yeah, he's teaching us. He's the one who is... the Avadutta Brahmana, who is actually teaching us what he learned from 24 Shiksha Gurus of this world. So for those of you who are joining us for the first time, then we want to see the things of this world not as sense objects, but as our Shiksha Gurus, and learn from them. So did anybody practice yesterday being the python? Yes, somebody did. Would you like to share how you did that? What did you do? You were satisfied? Good. You were satisfied with what was happening in your life? Okay. Sometimes we get nice things and sometimes we don't. So if you can accept whatever comes as the mercy of Krishna, then you can live like the python. Not to over-endeavor for material life, but to endeavor for spiritual life. Spend your time that way. So what did we learn from the ocean? Steadiness in? Gain or loss. So did anybody practice the lesson of the ocean yesterday? Anybody lose something or gain something? Usually we lose or gain something every day. Or to be grave, gravity is also a good quality of the ocean. Anybody try to apply the lesson of the ocean to your life yesterday? Ah, you talked about Krishna. Well, that's very good. That's gravity. Srila Prabhupada said, don't talk nonsense. Talk about Krishna. So that's being like, that's the lesson of the ocean also, to only talk about Krishna. Okay, the moth into fire. So, what do we learn from the moth? To control the sight, to control our eyes. What we look at can cause us great trouble if we're not careful, in this world especially. Because our eyes are taking pictures. The whole day we take pictures, and those pictures are stored in our unconscious. And at the time of death, they all come up, and sometimes even during japa, these pictures come up. Even pictures we don't know from last lives. We don't know, why am I thinking of that? Well, it's because it was something from one of your past lives that came up. So therefore, that's why it's very important to control where your eyes go during the day. Because time of death, you'll see your whole life go in front of you. And wherever your eyes stop, next birth. That may be your next birth. So you have to be careful about that. Anybody apply that lesson of sight? Looking at Krishna, the beautiful form of Krishna. Not in Krishna, Dharma. Okay, honeybee. What did we learn from the honeybee?
Variety is the spice of life.
Variety is the spice of life. Mm-hmm. Didn't we? How's that?
That's nice.
Oh, I see. He goes flower to flower. Okay. Well, That's very good. So you had a realization on that. And variety is the spice of life. And what should we find in this variety, which is the spice of life? We should take the essence of the variety. Yes, and what is the essence? Krishna. And what else?
Chanting.
Very good. Very good. And collect the essence of scripture. That's also the lesson of the honeybee. Yeah, that's nice. I want to write that down. Variety is the spice of life. That's really good. Very good realization.
She was also saying that it's a way of being non-sectarian.
That's right. Huh? Non-sectarian. Right. So how can we be non-sectarian as devotees? We think Hari Nama, Hari Nama, Hari Nama, but it's the only way, it's the only way, three times. So how can we be non-sectarian? Actually, Prabhupada, he gave that example. The nun came to see him and told what she was chanting. And Prabhupada said, yes, she was chanting, yesterday was Good Friday, and we're in that weekend, so let's repeat it about Lord Jesus Christ. And she was chanting, Lord Jesus Christ, please have mercy on me. That was her mantra. And she told Prabhupada, and Prabhupada said, yes, Jesus will have mercy on you. He gave blessings to that nun that she will get the mercy of Jesus. And so, yes. So the honeybee, he does madhukari. He goes house to house. Variety is the spice of life. And he never knows what he's going to get, actually. That reminds me of Radhanaswami, actually. I read his book. And before he was a devotee, of course, he used to hitchhike everywhere. Hitchhike means you go on the road and you put your thumb on and then you get a ride to wherever you want to go. Now, the problem was he and his friend, they didn't know where they wanted to go. So then they decided, okay, wherever the driver is going, that's where we'll go. So that's quite varieties of spice of life. And he had a very interesting life because of that, before he was a devotee. And a lot of adventures he had. So yes, variety is the spice of life. But we have our goal, actually. We know where we're going. Where are we going? What is our goal?
Vrindavan.
Back to Godhead. Good. Love of God. That's where we're going. That's where we want to go. How many of you want to go there? Everybody? Somebody's not so sure? Yeah, I had one person. He said he didn't want to go. Because there's no mountains there. And I said, what do you mean there's no? There's Govardhan. It's the highest mountain of all. Because I want to stay in the mountains. They said, well, then you should go back to Godhead because the chief, Giriraj, the chief of mountains is there. We have Giriraj with us today. So yes, variety. And our last guru for yesterday was the elephant. What did we learn from the elephant? Control of senses, sense of touch. Okay, so now today we are going to have actually six gurus, the honey thief, the deer, the fish, Pingala, the prostitute, the Karara bird, hawk, and the child. So in these classes we're also asking some questions. First, what do we learn from this guru? Second, how did Prabhupada exemplify this quality, this lesson? And third, how do we apply this to our life? So our first guru is the honeybee, and what we learned from the honeybee is very similar to the honey. This is the honey thief. So the greedy bee. Now the honeybee, there's two kinds of bees. There's the one that does madhukari, and there's another one that just stays by the hive and tries to enjoy the honey in the hive. So the greedy bee, he hoards the honey. So the greedy person, he hoards his money, and he doesn't want to spend it. He's compared to the greedy bee. So he gets a large amount of money with great struggle, great pain, but he's not always allowed to enjoy that money or give it in charity. He's like the greedy bee who actually struggles to produce a huge beehive, and then the honey thief comes and takes all the honey away. So similarly, no matter how carefully one hides his money or tries to protect it, there are those who are expert in finding it, and they will steal it. And now we have our very wonderful government all over the world that are very expert in stealing. If you keep anything, then they will certainly steal it. Is it on? No, it's on. It's over. We have. The beekeeper teaches us this lesson. Now, who is entitled to take your money? There's another verse. Just as a hunter takes away the honey produced by the honeybees, there are people who are actually entitled to take your money. And guess who those people are? Does anybody know?
The children.
No. The brahmacharis and sannyasis. They are the children they are the real children of the grihasthas. The brahmacharis. Now, who wants to practice? Wait till later. But unfortunately, the brahmachari doesn't have to keep it, so he has to give it to his guru. That's why they're entitled to the money, because they don't hoard it like the greedy bee. Everything the brahmachari collects goes to his guru. So that's why he's entitled. So if you keep money, accumulate money, and keep it somewhere, something will happen to that money. And maybe it will be taken away, but if it's not taken away, then something else will happen. If we hear in the first canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, that Kali was given four places to live, that is, where there's illicit sex, gambling, intoxication, and meat eating. And then he complained to the king that, you know, you have said I can go these places, but in your kingdom there are no such places, so where can I go? And he said, okay, wherever there is gold, wherever somebody is hoarding money, gold, you can go there also. So we see that if we don't spend our money for Krishna, it will be a cause of great distress. If we accumulate wealth and we don't spend it for Krishna, then it will cause us great distress. We hear so many stories of people who have won the lottery, and then after, it causes so much arguments, because then all the relatives want one man. He built a house for each of his relatives, and then, but they still weren't satisfied, and they were fighting that you got a bigger house. And finally, the man was so disturbed, he said, I wish I never won the money. And another one won the lottery, and he gave it all to his granddaughter, and she became very puffed up and proud, and then she started taking drugs and finally she committed suicide. And so here is another. These people, they don't understand how to spend money, because most people think that the goal of having money or artha is for kama or sense gratification. They think, you go to the airport, they think, oh, now every time you come out or in, the first thing is all the liquor and the cigarettes and all these things, and you're allowed to take this much, so buy it now because here it's cheaper. And they think this is enjoyment. This is how we can enjoy, but actually it's another form of suffering from beginning to end, to smoke and to drink. One of my gardener in Vrindavan, he was not like the gardener at Govardhan, and he was smoking, and now he'll probably die because he can't breathe anymore. So from beginning to end, there's no pleasure. This is happiness in the mode of ignorance. Happiness in the mode of ignorance, there's no pleasure beginning to end. So in the earning, there's a verse, 11th canto, 23rd chapter of Srimad Bhagavatam, in earning of money, attainment, increase, protection, expense, loss, and enjoyment, all men experience labor, fear, anxiety, and delusion. And then it goes on to say there are 15 undesirable qualities come from hoarded wealth. This is 11, 23, 18, and 19. Theft, violence, speaking lies, duplicity, lust, anger, perplexity, pride, quarreling, enmity, faithlessness, envy, and the dangers caused by women, gambling, intoxication are 15 undesirable qualities that contaminate men because of greed for wealth. And so this lying is one of those qualities. So from the honey thief, we learn not to hoard your money. You must, and that is the characteristic of a brahmana. He spends it. immediately. Would you like? I think you better turn off your phone, or else.
grief of wealth and money and audience, does that also apply to mercy?
Mercy?
Yes.
No, you can be greedy for mercy.
You can be greedy for mercy. You shouldn't share that out as well. You shouldn't share that out as well as fast as you
can. Yes. You can be greedy for it, and then you can be greedy to distribute it as well. That's very good. Chanakya Pandit says that whatever money you have, it will be spent. You can't keep it. Either the money will go from you, or you will go from the money at the end of death. So you cannot keep it together. It's not possible. So therefore, spend it for Krishna before you die. So Prabhupada again, as we said before, he kept a diary. He wrote down every penny he spent. He would walk instead of take the bus. I told this story in one class before, so I'll just tell it again. To show how, actually it was really funny, in Los Angeles when Prabhupada was here, he gave a class how grihasthas should go or out. Oh, it wasn't Prabhupada who gave the class, it was one of the brahmacharis who gave the class. And he said the grihasthas should go outside their door when it's lunchtime and say, "Is there anybody hungry?" Mm-hmm. Three times. So then the grihasthas were following that, and the brahmacharis would hide in the bushes. They would come, when they found an especially good cook. And they would come for lunch. But not like that. Don't do that. You know, these are true stories. It's the early days in ISKCON. So I'll tell this story again. I told it before. Some of you were not there in that class, but it's all right if we tell it again. That Brahmananda was telling about how his mother went to visit Srila Prabhupada in New York. She sat in a folding metal chair meant for VIPs. At that time, we were all on the ground. There were no such thing as chairs. But somehow they got one. And the mother said, "What are you doing with my boys?" And Prabhupada said, "I'm taking care of your sons. I'm feeding them, looking after them, providing. Actually, we have no income here. Maybe you would like to give some donation." And the mother looked at her sons, two brothers, looked at Prabhupada and said, "Donation? I've already given a donation. I've donated my sons." Prabhupada said, "Oh yes, very good." And so that was Srila Prabhupada. So how can we apply this to our life tomorrow? Of course, we have our other guru about the sun. You could also remember what we learned from the sun, that you accept and you also give in charity. So we can apply this lesson by finding some of our accumulated wealth and spending it for Krishna in some way or other. Somehow or other, spending it for Krishna. There's lots of ways. They have some programs here, so I'm sure you can find something, some way to do it. So, our next guru is the deer. The deer, right. Honey thief, the deer. So we have five senses. The first one was the moth. He taught us to control our eyes, the sight. Elephant teaches us to control sense of touch. The honeybee teaches us to control the sense of smell. Now the deer will teach us not to be captured by sound, by what we hear. In other words, don't be bewildered by karmic music. All the sound out there, very hard to avoid. The verse says, "A saintly person should never listen to songs and music promoting material enjoyment. Rather, a saintly person should carefully study the example of the deer, who is bewildered by the sweet music of the hunter's horn and is captured and killed." Yes. If you continuously hear that music, you become very disturbed. So what we have to do, or one very nice thing to do, is to play bhajan if you're a grihastha. You can have constant kirtan going on in the background, 24-hour kirtan, softly. You're not blasting, but nice background. So that will really change the consciousness. Your mind will actually become very fixed, and your house will be purified. Now, how did Srila Prabhupada exemplify this quality of controlling? And so one time, Gurudas said, "Oh, Prabhupada, you say everything perfectly." Prabhupada said, "That is because you hear perfectly." And Chudakirti tells a story of one time they were on an airplane, and so Srila Prabhupada went to Air India. I also went to Air India in the 70s, and they used to have always this Indian classical music playing all the time when you first come in the airplane, like sitar and tabla and that kind of music. So Prabhupada asked Chudakirti, "Do you like this music?" And Chudakirti was thinking, "Oh, if I say I like it, then that means, how can it be nice? It's just instruments playing and it sounds nice, but there's no chanting of Hare Krishna." So then Prabhupada said, "This music is very nice." And he said, "Yes, Srila Prabhupada, I am with great relief. It is nice." He said, "I felt like a cheater, unable to be honest. I was so concerned about the outcome of my answer, I forgot Srila Prabhupada was a person with likes and dislikes. I forgot. He heard the music and he remembered Krishna. I heard the music and calculated it was Maya. And wondered how to answer in Krishna conscious way." So this, oh yes, I don't know if I told this story last year, but I'll tell it again, about Indradyumna Swami on the airplane. I didn't tell it. Okay, good. So this is about the power of sound, spiritual sound. We're talking about the power of material sounds and how it can take you away from Krishna and make you fall down. But the power of spiritual sound is wonderful. Actually, just what now also came to my mind is how Aindra Prabhu joined this movement. I don't know if you all know that story, but it was Washington, D.C., and the devotees were out on Harinam. And Aindra heard the Harinam, and he just started running after the Harinam, and even he lost one of his shoes. And the devotee said, "Why don't you go and get your shoe?" He said, no, it's all right. Yeah. And he just kept going with the Harinam, and that was it. Love at first sight. And from that day on, he was a devotee, just following the Harinam. So the power of the Harinam. There is a Harinam tomorrow also. So I think many of you will be going, and I might be giving class to the four walls. So.
Yeah.
Oh, you're coming. Okay, very good. So I'll have somebody here to talk to. So Indradyumna Maharaj was on an airplane in South Africa, flying from Durban to another city. I don't know where. So they were on the plane, and they were coming in for the landing. And every time they would come in for the landing, a huge gust of wind would just shake the plane very violently. And so when this happened, Maharaj was chanting loudly, "Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna." Mm-hmm. And then there was a Christian going, "Jesus, Jesus." And there was a Muslim going, "Allah, Allah." And so the plane would fly back up. They couldn't land. So then tried again, and everyone was chanting. And then the plane couldn't land. And then next to Maharaj was an atheist. He said, "Swamiji, I do not believe in all these things. I'm a scientist." Yeah. So the plane went down for the third time and went back up, and the atheist said, "What is that you're saying?" He got white, he turned pale, he was ready to vomit. And so Maharaj told him the whole mantra, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare. Next time, then the pilot made an announcement. He said, "We will try one more time to land, and if we do not make it, then we're going to go back to where we came from." So they tried one more time. The big wind came. Everyone was chanting, even the atheists, and they landed the plane. So Maharaj said, "Now do you believe?" And he said, "Maybe." So Maharaj said, "Here's my card. If you have any questions, you can write to me." Maharaj always has these adventures everywhere he goes. So that's the power of the holy name. Even an atheist will chant at the time of death. Oh yeah, I heard a class just before I left Vrindavan about the Russian Sputnik went up, the first one to go around the Earth, circumambulate the Earth. It was this Russian cosmonaut, they called him. And they asked him, "So, do you see God up there?" He said, "No, I don't see God anywhere up here." So then, but then, when he was coming down, the Sputnik caught on fire, and his last words were, "God, help me!" So, then, and so God, even though he couldn't see God, he was certainly calling on God. And at the time of death, they say there are no atheists. Very difficult to be an atheist. Somebody just told me one of their relatives died. Oh yeah, her uncle, who was really bad the whole life, very bad, bad to her also. And when she was there at his before he died, not at the time of death, and he said, "Can you please pray for me?" As you know, she was spiritual. So yes, spiritual sound is so important. It liberates it. Now we're in this world, we're entangled, but if we just chant Hare Krishna, we can get out, we can be free from all the chains of the noise of nature. Very important sound. So what can we do to apply this lesson to our lives today? Anybody have any ideas? Chant? What?
More kirtan.
More kirtan, very good. Yes, more kirtan. Yes, we can do these things. The lesson of the deer. It's the lesson of the deer. So we try to see the positive alternative. We know it's not good to hear outside music, so if anybody has outside music going, then change it. Switch your channel to Hare Krishna. So then the last of our gurus with the senses is the fish. And the fish teaches us to control the sense of taste, to control the tongue, to be spared the hook of material life. So a fish, he wants to enjoy, and he's fatally trapped on the fisherman's hook. So a foolish person, bewildered by the urges of the tongue, is ruined. So even prasadam, if we eat too much, it's not a good idea either. It may cause some disturbance to our bodies, especially when you get old, over 50, 60. Then you really can't eat at night for sure, or too much in the day either. It's something you have to control. So we eat prasadam, and we engage our tongue in Krishna's service. We use all our senses in the service of Krishna. So Prabhupada, he was talking a lot about controlling the tongue. Nanda Kumar was one of his servants in the early days. And he said, there was a time when I was feeling physically challenged. Ghee and sugar and some of the general devotee prasad seemed too heavy for me and would make me sleep or get sick. When I ate light food, I would be healthy. And devotees told me, that's maya. If you eat prasadam, Krishna will bless you. Whatever you get, it's just a tiny fragment of your karma. Devotees eat prasadam and don't worry about health food. So then he told Prabhupada, that was philosophically sound, but practically speaking, if I ate a light diet, I served better and had a clearer mind. So I went to Prabhupada. Prabhupada, I understand the principle of accepting Krishna's mercy by taking prasad, but when I eat light, it's easier. When I eat heavy, it's difficult. What should I do? So Prabhupada said, well, if you're Sri Rupa Goswami, just take prasad. But if you're a neophyte, which all of you are, you have to decide what is good for your devotional service and what is not good for your devotional service. That was one answer. Now he gave the opposite answer to another devotee. So it depends actually on your attitude and your mood when you ask the question, what's good for you? So sometimes devotees are just like critical, or people are critical. They say, oh, it's, I remember another story about these two devotees who are from New Zealand, I think it was. Siddhasarup and his, there were two of them. And the first time they met Prabhupada, he came to their temple. And at the evening, Prabhupada wanted some sweets, but there was no sugar because they were against sugar in that temple. They thought it was really bad for you. And so there was no sugar in the whole temple. So he had them go out and buy some sugar and make some puris. And he said, bring the sugar. And he was dipping the puris in the sugar and eating like that in front of those two health food addicts. So, you know, they couldn't believe it. And then he said, luchichini sarpuli. Luchichini means puris with sugar. It's a Bengali favorite. So then in Montreal, there was a devotee Dayal Nitai, who was a yogi and into health, and he strongly criticized our diet. White rice, white sugar, butter. Prabhupada was in Montreal, and Brahmananda tells a story. I used to walk with Prabhupada to his apartment, and one day Dayal Nitai was complaining to Prabhupada, "Our food is not healthy. We're all going to get sick." Prabhupada stopped walking, and he pointed to Brahmananda. "You see Brahmananda here? He's been eating this food for so long. Does he look sick?" Very healthy at that time, Brahmananda. Now he's a little bit fat, but that time he was big and healthy. He was actually like Prabhupada's bodyguard, I think. So another story about London. Devotees used to go to London and have feasts in the evening. They would go to life members' houses and have feasts. And there was usually halva, sweet rice, puris, and really heavy, heavy food. So Śrīla Kīrti was watching Śrīla Prabhupāda at one such feast. And he was eating with the devotees. And he was relishing the prasadam. So when they got back to the manor, Prabhupāda rang his bell. And I trotted to his room. And Prabhupāda said, "So everyone has enjoyed prasadam?" Smiling, he said. "Everyone has enjoyed the feast?" Śrīla Kīrti said, "Well, actually, Prabhupāda, some of the devotees, they're not feeling well. They're saying everything was fried in oil instead of ghee." Prabhupāda said, "Well, what do you expect? I was watching them. I saw Pradumna ate so many puris, another devotee ate so much of the vegetable." Śrīla Kīrti said, "I was amazed. I noticed Prabhupāda eating, but I had no idea he had observed so much. He simultaneously did so many things without us noticing it." "Yes, Śrīla Prabhupāda, I agree, but I also don't feel well, and I didn't eat very much." Prabhupāda said, "Yes, I know this. You didn't eat so much, but I do remember you ate 4 puris." "Yes, Prabhupāda, I guess I did." I answered in disbelief. He said, "I offered my obeisances and left the room still trying to figure out how he knew all this. He knew more about what I ate than I did." So it's remarkable how he was so aware of everything that was going on around him. So that was Śrīla Kīrti. Prabhupada, he was watching, and he's still watching what you eat and what you're doing. Don't think he's not watching you. He's watching how many puris you eat and how much vegetable you eat. Now here's the last story. This is a very famous story. Probably some of you have heard this. On the airline, one stewardess was there, and she passed Śrīla Prabhupāda sitting, and she said, "Oh, this man looks very wonderful." So Prabhupāda, they were on the plane, and just before they boarded the plane, someone gave her some puffed rice that she had made. So then Prabhupāda said, just after takeoff, "Okay, time for prasadam." So I asked Śrīla Kīrti, said, "Do you want what is being served on the plane?" Prabhupāda said, no, we have our prasadam, that's all right." So they put down the tray table, and it was in aluminum foil. And Prabhupada ate, and then he said, "All right, now you can take." So Śrīla Kīrti tore it in half and kept half for himself and half for his godbrother. And then Prabhupada was near the window, and Śrīla Kīrti was in the middle, and then the godbrother was at the end in the seats, Paramahansa. And so one stewardess was walking down the aisle, and she reached past Paramahansa and grabbed some puffed rice from Śrīla Kīrti and popped it in her mouth. "Oh, this is very good. What is it?" It's puffed rice, he said. "I'm trying to keep my composure. It's made from rice." And Prabhupada looked at her with a broad smile. "Oh, this is very good," she said. "I'm glad you like it." Śrīla Kīrti said, a little shocked about what she had just done. And she said, are you having anything else to eat?" Śrīla Kīrti said, "Well, we're vegetarian. Unless there's some fruit, we can't have anything." He said, "Oh, I will go up to first class section and get you a basket of fruit." Oh. In a moment, she returned with the fruit and knives and asked, "Is there anything else?" So turning to Prabhupada, I said, "Prabhupada, would you like some hot milk?" "Yes, hot milk," he said. "Okay," I told her, "we will have some hot milk and we will have some as well. He will have and we will have." So she went to first class and came back with the hot milk. And so he said, Śrīla Kīrti was thinking, you know, Prabhupada was lecturing about super soul in the heart. However, I never experienced his presence before that day. That I was convinced only super soul in the heart of that stewardess could have inspired her to act in such an unprofessional manner, just to grab somebody's booty. Sometimes devotees would offer me money to get a taste of Prabhupada's maha. He said, I never took it. And they begged for the opportunity to render personal service. And here was this flight attendant going where, boldly going where no one had ever gone before, for the mercy of Krishna. So then there's a footnote to this like 10, 15 years later, the devotees are going village to village and book distribution. And they went to one village, opened the door. This lady opened, and there she had pictures of Krishna. She had the books and tilak, and it was the stewardess. She had become a devotee just by taking Prabhupada's maha on that airplane. She said, yes, I took your guru's prasad, Srila Prabhupada's prasad, when I used to work in the airline. So very powerful. Prasadam is very powerful. It can change your life. It can change your heart. So this is what we learned from the fish. Yes, I saw some goldfish. Where did I see those goldfish? I don't know. Anyway, maybe in my dream. Oh, they're here? Oh, yeah, in that little pool. Yeah, all those little goldfish. There. Yeah, so we can learn from them. Did you ever think that? You look at those goldfish and learn? Learn your lesson. They're your shiksha gurus. All the little fish. And they teach you to control the tongue. How can we apply this to our life today?
Eat more
prasadam, okay. Sounds good. Here's one lesson we can apply at least. But not too much.
Only what is required.
Only what is, okay. So you better you combine the python and the fish together today when you take prasadam.
Eat only prasadam.
That's good. That's a good lesson. Eat only prasadam. For those of you living outside, it might be difficult. Who knows? So our next guru is Pingala, the prostitute. From Pingala, we're going to learn detachment from sense gratification. Interesting. You should think that the opposite would be there, but no. So she was living in the city of Videha. She stood outside her door at night, showing her form, desiring money. One night, nobody was coming. So she became morose. And she was going out. Midnight came. And she was just failing. Nothing was happening. And so here in this world, everyone is trying so hard to be happy, trying to enjoy. But actually, mostly we are living with failure. There is no happiness. So after a night of failure, Pingala lamented, oh, why didn't I try to please the Supreme Lord? Somehow she got a realization. And there's a good reason why. I'll tell you later why she got that realization. Instead, I'm serving insignificant men. They're only giving me unhappiness, fear, anxiety, lamentation, and illusion. So what we should learn is by giving up service to Krishna, we become a victim of the illusory energy and we suffer. So Pingala, finally, she had this realization, I will now pay the price of complete surrender. And the Lord is pleased when develops detachment for the world and comes out of hopelessness and becomes indifferent to the world. So why? How did she become so detached? Because actually, Dattatreya, who is the Avadhut Brahmana, who's teaching us these lessons, he stayed one night in her courtyard. And she knew he was a saintly person. He didn't come there for business. But she saw, oh, here's a saintly person. She cleaned the courtyard for him and made it nice. And so, therefore, she got some benefit and she became detached from spirit, from material life. So so material desire is undoubtedly the cause of the greatest unhappiness, and freedom from such desires the cause of happiness. So completely cutting off her desire to enjoy lovers, Pingala very happily went to sleep at night. So in Ireland, one devotee told me he was on book distribution, and he met one man. Now in Ireland, it's the whole country is an island, and there's many islands inside the country that's full of rivers and lakes. They call them lochs. Loch this, loch that. L-O-C-H. And so people there have boats. Big, big, fancy boats. The boats cost more than houses in Ireland. They're very expensive. Nice boats where you have a kitchen and everything inside. And so one man on Harinam. He bought a very expensive boat. He said, you know, when I bought this boat, it was the happiest day of my life. said, but then, after some time, I sold that boat, and it was the happiest day of my life. Such a realization, because it gave me so much trouble to maintain and to keep up and spend so much money. So then he realized. So there's three categories of happiness in this world. You aspire, you want something, you desire it, and you don't get it. So then you're miserable. That's the first category. Then there's the second category. You aspire for something, and you get it, but it's not what you thought it was. It doesn't live up to your expectations. It breaks in a day, you know, without if you don't have a guarantee. Or it just doesn't work nicely, or it doesn't live up to your expectations. So again, you're miserable. Then the third category, you aspire for something, you get it. It lives up to your expectations, but then you lose it. So then, and if you don't lose it in life, then you lose it in death. So this is the happiness in this world. It's all mundane enjoyments lead to misery, but not so for spiritual pleasure. So whatever you have, that's why we should always, whatever we get in this world, use it for Krishna, use it in Krishna consciousness, and then it won't give you misery. As soon as you want to use your money or use anything for your own sense enjoyment, then you will suffer. The suffering will be mixed there. It'll all be mixed suffering. And so grihastha life can also be very nice if you use it for Krishna. Krishna is the center. Or if you simply forget Krishna, then it will be very difficult.
Yeah, I was going to say, it sounded like a wife you were describing.
It can be your wife or your husband. So now there's one wonderful thing about Krishna consciousness. The Prabhupada talks about it in one lecture in Los Angeles, that every mantra you chant, every obeisances you do, every prayer you say, every thought for Krishna, it goes into your spiritual bank account. You have a spiritual bank account. You get some credit. And when your account becomes very big, you can buy something. What can you buy with your spiritual bank account? Take it back to Godhead, Krishna Prema. You can buy Krishna, actually. Krishna gives himself. There's a wonderful verse at the end of the Uddhava Gita, not in this section, but I'd like to share it with you. It's about who is the most intelligent person. He said this process of devotional service is the supreme intelligence of the intelligent, the cleverness of the most clever, for by following it, one can in this very life use the temporary and unreal to achieve me, the eternal reality. So the whole Uddhava Gita, 11th canto, it's very, very strongly taught the difference between material and spiritual, temporary and eternal, soul and the body. That's the whole teaching of the Uddhava Gita. And then at the end, he says, so therefore, you should use the temporary to get the eternal. Isn't that a wonderful thing to do? You can use something material to get eternal life. So, Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur says that one who gets some diamonds or gold for just in exchange for a small coin, he's called intelligent. And a person who can take a gold coin from an intelligent person is called intelligent and skillful also. But one cannot say who is so intelligent to get a Chintamani or common Dana. So he says the inhabitants of Bhartabhumi, which means this earth, are all mortal, born in low families. Krishna says, now here's Krishna speaking, there they have these bodies, they're born in low families, but they offer to me their bodies not worth a penny, which are deformed and afflicted with old age and disease, but they attain me, the ocean of sweetness. Accepting their offerings, I, who am supposed to be the cleverest, out of joy, give myself with my priceless ornaments, bracelets, and crown to the devotees. So, we want to trade these bodies in for Krishna. It's a good deal, right? Good deal. How do you do that? You take your ears and hear about Krishna. You take your tongue and you chant. You use your mind and remember. That's how you give your body to Krishna. And Vishnath Chakravarti says, but the Lord is attained even by offering only one part of the body. You just give your tongue. What intelligent person would not do this? So isn't that wonderful? You learn from Pingala detachment, but from the Uddhava Gita, we also, detachment comes. When you see the difference between material and spiritual, the body and the soul, then you want to trade in your useless body for Krishna. In the America, United States, they used to have this program, Cash for Clunkers. You have a car, they call it a clunker because it doesn't work, it's really old and useless. But there is a program where you could trade in your car, and the government would give you $5,000 credit towards a new car because they wanted to get the old cars off the road. So this is even a better deal. Trade in your body for Krishna. So Prabhupada was detached. How did he exemplify this quality of detachment? When he first went to America, he was invited to one person's to a gathering, and this man put a middle-aged widow next to Prabhupada, thinking, oh, maybe he's interested, you know, in some relationship. But Prabhupada was just sitting there chanting his welcome. And then the host said to Prabhupada, you are not like the other swamis. So that's the other swamis who came to America. We're interested in relationships. And Prabhupada was detached. So he was also equal to women. He was not harsh, as we were saying yesterday. He was not harsh. And Prabhupada said to one, my god sister, Mula Prakriti, who was one of the biggest book distributors, and she used to travel everywhere and teach how to distribute books. He said to her, in this age, it's actually a benefit to be a woman. In Kali Yuga, things are so degraded, people don't trust men. Hardly anyone will allow a man to come up to them or will open their door if a man comes. But if a woman comes, then he'll open the door. So he said that when I was young, there was a company selling this Brahmi hair oil, and they sent respectable young women door to door, and everybody opened their door and they bought this Brahmi hair oil. Said it was never even proven this oil had any medicinal properties. He said, now Lord Chaitanya is sending nice young women to help the poor conditioned souls go back to Godhead. This is his plan. So that's plan of Lord Chaitanya. If you use the women in Krishna consciousness, then everything is very good. So our next guru is the Karara bird, or the hawk in English. And the hawk will also teach us detachment from possessions. So we already learned how attachment to things in this world makes you miserable. When you give up such attachment, you get happiness. So the story goes, once a group of large hawks were unable to find any meat, so they attacked another weaker hawk who was holding some. We see this in Vrindavan with monkeys. Some small monkey will have a banana, and all the big monkeys will come and grab the banana away from the small monkey. So at that time, being in danger of his life, the hawk gave up his meat and experienced actual happiness. So happiness in this world. So somebody wants it, okay, take it. Take it, I don't want it. And that's in Vrindavan. I think I told you that a few years ago, that when the monkeys attack you, then it's best to give them the prasadam and leave that place. I didn't want to do that. One time I had some prasadam, it was very expensive. I bought it for some devotees in Nepal. And there was all these monkeys that lived by my house, and I had about 10 feet from my house to where I was, the gate. And in between myself and my house were three monkeys. And unfortunately I had forgotten to put the prasadam in my bag. So there I was, like a target. And so whenever I see monkeys, I try to psych them out, try to figure out what they're thinking. Are they going to attack me? What are they going to do? Of course they're going to. But I thought, oh, one monkey was in front. He passed me by. I said, okay, I'm safe. But that monkey who passed me by jumped on my back. And the two in front started growling. But I didn't want to give them. So I shouted, Krishna! You know, like you're about to die. And they respected that, and the one jumped off, and the others backed away, and they let me go. So, quality chanting. Monkeys, respect quality chanting. If you're about to die, as if you're about to die. In Radhe is also good. Radhe, Krishna, both good. So then they will let you go. Screaming may not work. But chanting is very good. So this is, but normally it's, don't do that. You should give them the prasad and run. Better not to do that. Because they know me and I know them, and so sometimes they'll let me go. But they don't know you, so they won't let you go. So we learned from the hawk that it's better not to hold on to things, especially if somebody wants what you have. If somebody's envious of you, then better you just give it to them. So there's illusions, or illusion of happiness. And Prabhupada, he talked about this illusion. One time they were walking, now I don't know where this is, Auckland. Auckland is in Australia, or is it in New Zealand? Auckland, okay, you know where Auckland is. I didn't know. New Zealand. Yeah, there might be. Well, there's a Merritt Park, and that makes it more specific. In downtown Auckland. Oh, not Auckland.
Auckland.
Oh, I'm pronouncing it like a real resident, huh? That's how you pronounce Auckland. I never knew that. I think this is the California one. LA. Yeah. So they passed a small zoo with a large sign in front of it that read, Children's Fairyland. Children's Fairyland, Prabhupada said. Read. Mm-hmm. Then pointing to the skyscrapers, he added, Adults Fairyland. Mm-hmm. Because they think these skyscrapers will make us happy. If it was New Zealand, then it would be very appropriate, because all the skyscrapers are coming down in Christchurch. They can't, the ones that didn't fall down already are being taken down. And it looks just like when you're doing construction of a building. You know, it's coming slowly, slowly down, bit by bit. It's not like they're just not knocking it, because that's dangerous. You have to take it down, brick by brick. And I was looking, and it looked to me just like, the same as when you're constructing a building. But they call it deconstruction. I never heard that word before. Deconstruction. Because they're deconstructing the buildings in Christchurch. Yes, so they have realized Adults Fairyland. Now, Prabhupada said that, who's telling this story? You should appear to. Let me see. No, it's a letter from somebody. Yes, it sounds like should appear to. It was 5:30 in the morning, and Prabhupada called me into his room, wanting to know why Shamsundar and Pradyumna were still sleeping. I don't know, I replied. Srila Prabhupada said, bring them here. Then when we returned, he said, we must conquer oversleep. Rising early, taking a cold shower is not austerity, just common sense and good hygiene, Prabhupada said. Then, revealing a wonderful truth, His Divine Grace told us, by chanting 16 rounds, following the regulative principles, rising early, reducing one's eating and sleeping, one gets spiritual energy. If one follows these guidelines for 12 years, all he speaks will be perfect. Mm-hmm. So there you go. Yes, whatever you say will come true. Whatever you say will come true. If you say something, watch out what you speak.
You could follow it perfectly for 12 years.
Yeah, if you follow just these things, get up early, chant 16 rounds, follow regular principles, reduce your eating and sleeping, that's it, that's what he said. Basically following the morning program and being a devotee. After 12 years, all he speaks will be perfect and will be true. So our last guru for today is the child. So we see the child here, some children, very simple. Simplicity. The child, just like Prahlad Maharaj, he was always felt like he was in the lap of Krishna. So the child in the lap of the mother feels she doesn't have to worry about anything. The small child, the baby. That they don't think, okay, what I have to eat today, where will I sleep, or what will I do today. The mother and father, they already have this taken care of. The child is very simple and very innocent and very dependent. So this compared to a devotee. And he's very simple, very innocent, very dependent on the Lord, like Prahlad Maharaj. We're all worried about the planets in our life, like Rahu Ketu, Saturday. So Prahlad Maharaj, he was, there's a verse in Bhagavatam that says he was under Krishna Graha. Graha means planet. So he was just under the Krishna Graha. So that's where we should be also, under the Krishna Graha. And when you come to the level of chanting on the clearing stage, then the planets cannot touch you. That's one of the symptoms of chanting on the clearing stage of Harinam. Offensive, clearing, and pure. So it's the middle stage. Not so difficult. If you can just chant on this Navabhas stage, you can have this result. So two types of people are free from anxiety and merged in great happiness. One who is a fool, and one who is a saintly person, who is beyond the world. So these two people can be happy. Everyone else is miserable in this world. The fool and the saintly person, they're happy. Because they don't know. The fool doesn't know. And the saintly person knows Krishna. And so he's very happy. So Prabhupada was very childlike. When he would travel on the airplane, Chidakirti said he would never conform to any of the rules. He would take prasadam on takeoff sometimes. And he said sometimes, Chidakirti would have to hold on to his glasses to the water. So it wouldn't, when on the takeoff you go up like this and the glasses will come down, and he had to hold up on, and they would come and say, put your tray table up. And if anyone said anything to him, he would ignore them, and then they would turn to Shudakirti, and Shudakirti would say, I can't stop him, shrug his shoulders. And they just realized there were no match for a Vaikuntha person. So one time, again in St. Moritz, that's in a popular ski resort in Switzerland, there was snow all over the ground as far as the eye could see. And they were in a hotel, and the hotel had a central lobby with an elevator, and they were had a big three-bedroom condominium with a kitchen. And the living room had a sliding glass doors with a fantastic view of all the mountains. And it was breathtaking to everyone, but not to Srila Prabhupada. So Prabhupada, they were there, and it was time for his morning walk. And he said, we will go for a walk. Shall we see how cold it is? And they were on the ground floor, so they could just open the sliding glass door, and they went outside, and suddenly a whistling blast of ice-cold air filled the entire apartment, blizzard-like. Oh, this is much too cold, Prabhupada said, with his eyes wide open. And so he said, whenever I witnessed these childlike expressions, my heart melted with joy. Prabhupada exuded the innocence of a child. While most disciples experience his powerful, determined preaching, I felt fortunate to see Prabhupada's face light up with enduring, intimate expressions. We will walk in the hallway inside the building, he said. A little arctic blast wasn't going to interfere with Srila Prabhupada's morning walk. So, His Divine Grace, Pradyumna, and I headed for the hallway. This presented a different set of problems because the resort was designed to operate with very little energy wastage. So when the hall sensors detected someone, the lights would turn on for a specific amount of time and then quickly turn off again as soon as you pass by. So as we walked up and down the corridor, we had to keep pushing different buttons to keep the lights on. So then, Prajumna eventually went back into the apartment, and Prabhupada and I were walking up and down, and I was running from button to button, pushing and chanting. This went on for about half an hour. This cold weather has given me an appetite, Prabhupada said. You can go in and make some halwa. All right, Prabhupada, I replied, still concerned about the button pushing. Do you want me to wait until after your walk, or should I go now? Prabhupada humorously retorted, no, I will walk. You can go make the halwa. We always loved when Prabhupada had an appetite. It was a joy to cook for him. When I went in, I said to the others, Prabhupada is still walking in the hall. Someone needs to go out and push the button to keep the lights on for him. And they all peeked out the door to see Prabhupada chanting, walking, and pushing the button. Keep lights on. It was quite humorous. Prabhupada was very simple. So the last example of Prabhupada's simplicity is a morning walk in Perth, Australia. So it must be told by... No, it's again Srila Kirti. So one day Prabhupada was in a talkative, humorous mood. Is a devotee simple or crooked? He said, smiling. He is simple, Srila Prabhupada, one disciple answered. Are you sure? Simple or crooked? He again asks with a rascal-like gleam in his eye. Yes, the devotee is simple, the disciple enthusiastically responded, not realizing he had fallen for a trick question. Srila Prabhupada then sprang the unexpected punchline. Actually, the devotee is crooked. Everyone stood there with their mouths open. Me, for example, Prabhupada explained. I came to your country. Everyone is eating meat, taking intoxication, and doing so much nonsense. I tricked everyone. I tricked all of you into becoming Krishna conscious. So, in that sense, the devotee must be crooked because he must be able to trick. Just like I have tricked everyone. No one wanted Krishna consciousness, but I have tricked you. So, we don't know how he did that, but we did feel like we didn't know why we were joining. We were joining the temple. But yet it was all due to Prabhupada's His mercy. Yeah, I can give my example. But, I went to the temple in March. I was visiting the first time. And, I was looking for a guru, actually. And I asked the devotees, I said, so what do you have to do here, you know? What is your process? And they said, well, you have to chant, dance, and eat. I said, oh, okay, I'll try it. And I was chanting, dancing, and eating. And then after that, like the mantra wouldn't go out from my head. And then also we got books, we started reading, and then I started going like to the Sunday feast and doing some seva also, some typing. So, but I thought, okay, yeah, everything's nice, but you know, I was with my husband and my husband wasn't so interested, and so I thought, well, yeah, I'll just, you know, practice at home. So then one weekend, Prabhupada said he was coming to the Boston Temple. And so they said, would you like to stay for the weekend? Prabhupada's coming. I said, okay, yeah, I'll stay for the weekend. My husband stayed at home and did what he wanted to do. So then that weekend, after we were there Friday night and then Saturday, Prabhupada phoned and said, oh, actually, I cannot come, but I'm sending four sannyasis instead. So he sent four sannyasis, and one of them was Vishnujan Maharaj. And so we were out on Harinam a whole day and whole night for 2 days, the weekend. At the end of the weekend, I said to myself, I'm so happy, why should I go back home? So I went home and said goodbye to my husband and joined the temple. And my husband joined 2 months later because of his hippie philosophy, I won't work. And I was working little, so we had some money. But after I left, that was it. So he had to join too. Keep his philosophy good. Devotees don't work. In those days, well, we were working harder than when we were hippies. But it wasn't work. It was devotional service. So, yeah. The reason I joined was just because Prabhupada said he was going to come. And not only myself, but there were about 5 or 6 or maybe even 10 who stayed for the weekend and never left that weekend in Boston Temple. Mm-hmm. Just because Prabhupada said he was going to come. And he didn't come. So what I understood from that, my lesson was that sometimes we hesitate to take the next step. But Prabhupada is always there pushing us to take the next step.
So he did come at one
sense anyway. Yeah, he sent the four sannyasis. He sent them, and he did come, yeah. And myself, Ananda Manjari, my god sister, she also joined that weekend. There was a married couple that joined. I think it's, can't remember his name, Vidura. They all joined that weekend. We all joined that weekend. Because we were coming, but you know, we weren't ready to take that step. And then Prabhupada, just that little push we needed to just experience. I mean, I actually wanted to stay in the temple. After 2 weeks, I came, but it was midnight, and I was a little, you know, not sane or sober. And so they noticed that. But everybody was up at midnight. They were chanting their rounds. They hadn't finished. And Pradyumna was raiding the refrigerator. And everybody, and I just loved the chanting, you know, the japa is so good. And we asked our guru if we could stay overnight, and he took one look at us and said, no. So anyway, after 5 months, then we joined. And maybe it was 4 months. April, May, June, July. It was 4 months, I guess. Yeah, 4 months. So one last story, how Prabhupada is simple. Prabhupada said to Pradyumna, your phone rings all the time, it's a nuisance. So here we have that. Someone doesn't call. In India, someone doesn't call before they come. Not anymore, that's the old days. Everyone has cell phones, even the rickshaws. In India, someone doesn't call before they come. They just show up at your door and say, Ai, you say, come in. Our Indian philosophy is open door, open window, open mind. This is our philosophy. We do not like to be blocked in. Of course, now it's changed. Times have changed, and everyone has a cell phone in India. Everyone has that. Everywhere you go. The laborers, everyone has cell phones. I was playing with it and talking on it. You go on the train in India, and the husband has a cell phone, the wife has a cell phone, the kid has a cell phone. Everyone has their own, because they'll fight if they don't get their own. But this is modern India today. What to do? So, any questions on these six gurus we have today? So you have more opportunity to practice. I would just remind you of the gurus for today, Honey Singh. What do we learn from the Honey Singh? Not to hoard money. And yesterday also we had a similar lesson from the sun. Was it yesterday or the day before yesterday? Day before yesterday. That the sun evaporates water and it gives it back into the ocean. So similarly, this devotee accepts things for Krishna service and then he gives them up when the right person comes. Yes.
Can
you call that thing? No, you can ask.
In regards to trying not to hoard, what about spiritual things? Should we try and attach ourselves to those, like in the sense of that?
Mahaprasad?
You'd be a Mahaprasad or maybe things from the deities or something like that, but also just maybe being attached to a particular service that we do. Mm-hmm. Is that a kind of hoarding that we should try and
do? No, it's good to be attached to anything spiritual, because we've been attached to material things for so long. It's good to, when you become more purified, then it can be, but now it's not an attachment. At this level of advancement, when you're starting devotional service, it's good to be attached to your service. It's very good.
To be greedy.
Yeah, it's good to be greedy, but not to cause trouble to others. Don't, push other devotees out of the way, saying, out of the way, I have to go into the Pujari blocking my entrance. So you have to see the attitude. You have to check your attitude always. That it's not like that. We had a funny drama. Ireland, I remember the drama to this day, talking about what is false humility. Have you done that?
No.
Yeah, so we have this one devotee, the guru has come and he's going, oh Guruji, your wish, your command is my desire. Your desire is my command. And he's washing his feet and everything. Next day he's chanting japa and somebody bumps him and he goes, hey, how come you bump me? so that's false humility. You have to be careful about that. You have to treat everyone as our shishu guru. Okay, so that is, we did the honey thief, the deer. What did we learn from the deer?
Spiritual sound.
Spiritual sound. No material sound. From the fish? Control the tongue. So you have a lot of gurus out there in your garden. All those fish. Whenever you see the fish now, you can remember the lesson from the fish. You never thought they would be your guru, huh? Pingala, the prostitute, what do we learn? Detachment from material happiness. The hawk is detachment from things. And the child? Simplicity. Okay, so
you said about the hawk, how when someone is envious of you, they want something.
Yeah.
Like there's this example in the Shastra, I think someone, they wanted the bones of he just gave it.
No, it's not because they were envious of him.
Oh, no.
It was a purpose to him.
Okay. Yeah. But let us say someone is envious and they want your life, for example.
Yeah. No, you don't. No. That's not, because your life doesn't belong to you. It belongs to Krishna. No. So that's extreme. We don't go to that extreme with the example. But it's just, it basically, it means things. Mm-hmm. Things, you know, that hang around you for some time. Yes? You had a question? No. Yeah.
With the lesson from Gurulaj, the being attached to sense gratification, obviously there's some misery, but the attachment to the material body is so strong.
Right.
I was just wondering, it seems like very hard to cut that attachment.
To the material body?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's very hard because we think it's us, basically. So we're attached to ourselves, for sure. And the only way to do that is to get a higher taste. As I gave some examples, and I don't remember which class, that when you're so absorbed in serving Krishna, and this will come in tomorrow morning's class as well, the arrow maker, he's so absorbed in making his arrow, he didn't notice the procession with the emperor going by. So if we're so absorbed in our service, in our relationship with Krishna, then we forget our attachment to the body. And it's the only way. It's the only way you can do it. The only way is to become attached to Krishna, attached to your guru, attached to devotees. And then you can forget that attachment to the body. And to use it as much as possible in Krishna's service. Use your body. Purify it. Purify your senses. We are not like the Ashtanga yogis who stop the senses and they're adverse to the senses. We are not like that. But we do have a positive alternative, and that is to see Krishna, see the beautiful deities, absorb our minds in them, think of them during the day, think of the beauty of the deities, and prasadam, and hearing. Kirtan, actually, the most powerful is kirtan. So if you can have your 24-hour kirtan going on, then that's enough to make you forget your attachment to your body. You can have somehow 24-hour kirtan in your mind, or do as much kirtan as possible. That's what we did. So it's our program. When we were new devotees, it was 10 to 12 hours Harinam every day. 10 in the morning, 10 at night. That's all we did. And you forgot your body, for sure. You know, you were just floating there. You're just floating in there. And you couldn't tell what was up, what was down, where, you know, where you were. We were in Boston Common, we didn't know. You know, you really connect very deeply with Krishna and very easily when you're in kirtan. Just recently they had in Mayapur this kirtan mela. It was wonderful, very much like a taste of the spiritual world. So whenever you get a chance to join a 12-hour kirtan or a 24-hour kirtan or a kirtan mela, try to do that. Try to do that. Here we have a lot of sounds here today, I think, illustrating our examples. Only today. Today's the first day. Yeah.
On the same topic of sound, when we were talking about all the material songs, like, you know, sometimes within our movement itself, a lot of devotees, they transform songs that they would be so attached to into the Hare Krishna mantra. And sometimes I do it myself. You know, if a tune keeps keeping my mind, it just
it's good.
I just put the Maha mantra in it.
Good idea.
Okay?
Yeah, that's a good idea. Yeah, just whatever you have, just change it to Krishna. Change the channel. That's okay. That's good. So that was the deer.
Yeah.
Fish. What did we learn from the fish? No, we were in Pingala, yeah. Karara bird. How can we apply that to our lives today? That's a hard one. Well, you can combine the karara bird and the sun. This is something you don't really need. You can give it away. Child. Yes, no duplicity today. Simplicity. Any further questions? Yes?
I'm not talking about having building your spiritual bank account
right.
and purchasing Krishna. I was just wondering, in terms of service,
mm-hmm.
We could increase quantity, but just for myself, I'm just Krishna service.
Yeah, exactly.
So I was just wondering if you could comment on the
okay. So the question is, sometimes we might get caught up in so much service that we forget Krishna. Anyway, Krishna still sees the service, there's no danger. But what we learn as devotees, as we grow older and more mature, is what is the mode of goodness and how to live in the mode of goodness. And there's one word which is describing the mode of goodness, and that is balance. So Gita teaches us that working, eating, sleeping, working, and recreation, there should be a balance in all those things. At a certain point in your life, you realize that you don't want to do things mechanically anymore. The older you get, the more mature, and you want to do more quality than quantity. And whatever you do, it should be with quality. So this is at this point, then you start to try to make a better balance in your life. When you're young, we weren't balanced at all. We did 20-hour service for seven years. As long as Prabhupada was here, that was our schedule. 20 hours, 4 hours sleep, 20-hour service. But then when you get older, you can't do that anymore. And so then it's more, you grow more into intellectual service, and because the body is not capable of doing so much. But it's always good you have to be very introspective and see how to balance your life. Even like most people have the problem material and spiritual, so we don't have that problem, but we have the problem of making sure that we think of Krishna. Don't forget Krishna. That's the most important rule. So then you need to be introspective, and it may not mean that you have to diminish your amount of service, but you can intelligently delegate, or you can do it in a more intelligent way, so that you're not so caught up, and you have time to chant nicely, to read nicely, to associate nicely with devotees, to attend seminars and classes that you want to attend, to go to 24-hour kirtan. These things are very important to inspire us. Retreats and things like this. What I do, actually, I feel like this a lot, that I have too much in the service, and my service is Srimad Bhagavatam, you know, printing books. Printing books is, you know, you work with a layout person, and it's a lot of also, you know, picture editing, so many things that are not exactly, I mean, they're all pictures of Krishna and things, but at the same time, you may not think of Krishna while you're doing it. So what I do, I do feel that sometimes I'm overburdened with too much work. So what I do, I take a day off, and I chant 32 rounds or 64 rounds. And then I feel really good, and I'm ready to go again. So you might need one day in a week. You might need one day every Ekadashi, chant extra. And then I feel like then I'm balanced again, and I feel like, oh, yeah, okay, it's all right. And when you chant, you actually have time to be introspective. And it's very purifying, and it helps a lot for anybody. Try to eat. There is one brahmachari. He's in charge of the 22nd Avenue place in New York. And he had every Monday he chants 64 rounds. And everybody, he's the president of the temple, but they respect that. They say yes, because he said that way. Now he's up for sannyas. So, but he used to take that every Monday, he would chant 64 rounds. So I try to do every Ekadashi, but 32, I don't have. I have so much work that I can't do 64 right now. But 32 is enough. One time in my life, it was very unbalanced, and I was like, you know, my mind was disturbed. So then I started chanting 32 rounds every day, just to be sane. Just to be sane. It helps. It actually helps more to associate with Krishna in this pure form of holy name. Mm-hmm.
So on the topic of simplicity. Not being duplicit. Like when a child like children are very straightforward and they don't really lie, they
right.
can get away with it. But usually as an adult, you can't really be that straightforward without hurting people, or
we're
always taught to be polite. So what is right. the what is the balance between being respectful and still not suspicious?
Well, if the Bhagavad Gita teaches us in 17th chapter, verse 15, austerity of speech. Speak truthfully, not to agitate others. So one time they made a Back to Godhead article, and they were kind of criticizing Bullapacharya, because he said that he was superior. He did a superior commentary to Shridhar Swami, so they printed that in Back to Godhead. And so one of Prabhupada's, his donor, you know, Sumati Maharaji, got really upset. And so, you know, Prabhupada said, no, you should not print things like that and speak like that. And he would usually not mention names when he would speak in public. So, yes, when you're dealing with people, you need to speak in such a way that they will appreciate it. Like, I'll tell you one story of Birbal and Akbar.
Yeah.
You know that story? There's one story.
Yeah.
An astrologer came to the emperor, and he said, and the emperor asked, he said, oh, last night I had a dream that I lost so many teeth. He says, oh, that means that all your relatives are going to die before you. And he got really angry at the astrologer. He said, get out. Get away from me. I don't want to hear more. So then this astrologer went to Birbal and told him what happened. And so Birbal said, okay, so this is what you have to do. Disguise yourself and go back. So he disguised himself and he went back. And the emperor said, oh, a different astrologer. Okay, let me ask you. I had this dream where I lost so many of my teeth. And so the astrologer said, oh, very auspicious. That means that you will live the longest of everyone in your family. So it's the same thing, but he said it in a different way. You will live very long. And so he gave him so much gold coins. Good astrologer. Very good. So it depends how you speak. You can tell the truth in such a way that people will appreciate it. They will appreciate what you're saying. Not you go on book distribution and you meet an old person and you say your teeth are falling out, your liver is defective, you have all these wrinkles and you're going to die. You better read this book. You go back and tell your parents, your new devotee, you say, you're not my mother, you're not my father. I'm a soul. I'm not this body. So, I mean, it's the truth, but it's not the way to say it, you know. It's not how you preach. And we make these mistakes sometimes. And people don't appreciate it. And they would even complain to Prabhupada sometimes about the book distributors. And Prabhupada, he had to write a letter to one lady apologizing and saying, oh, they're just young, and please forgive them. They mean well, but they're not. And so, it's like, you have to be careful. And there's different ways of preaching. You know, instead of saying, oh, you look well over 70 years old and you're about to die, and you know, you say, oh, you look very mature, very wise, so I think you would appreciate this book. you have learned too much in life. And you have so much experience, so this knowledge you would be able to appreciate very much. And so, you know, it's like, that's the example. So you need intelligence to speak like that. Prabhupada can say anything and get away with it. He said that, you know, when he was challenging, saying all these answers, really heavy things to the TV reporter. He said, I can do that, but you cannot. He said, old men and young children, they can speak like that. Old ladies, too. You can say things, and people accept because they think, oh, yeah, it's just crazy old lady. So, or a child doesn't know better. And old people are also kind of simple. They become, you see that, they're actually very simple, old people. And they even forget to get dementia and stuff. So, okay, so I'll go to Srila Prabhupada. Our last class will be 10:30 tomorrow. I hope somebody comes because there's a big Harinam and everybody may not be here. So, and if you're not here, then stay tuned to the little recorder here. Somebody will bring it tomorrow, you think?
Yeah.
Okay, somebody will bring it. Okay, good. I'll go to Srila Prabhupada.